We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is Tyrese Haliburton, and you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Indiana, home of Pacers basketball.
Miller for three, and he got it.
Legends have been born.
Miller retreats to the three-point line.
Memories have been made.
Haliburton, a deep three for the lead.
Bam, baby!
Great basketball has been played.
Nembhard away. Hits a three at the buzzer to win the game.
In 49 states, it's just basketball.
Flips it to the big fella, fake shoots, and hits!
But this is Indiana.
Flips it down.
And you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Let's go!
Your go-to Pacers podcast.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
We got Pacers hooping. Let's talk stats. Hot takes. All facts. New topics. Updates. Three-pointers. Fast breaks. We keep scoring. We don't need to stop. New episodes. Weekly drops. This your number one podcast. Sweeping every team. We gon' need a mop.
Setting like the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Pacer Nation, what is going on? Welcome back to another episode here of your go-to Pacers podcast, Setting the Pace. I'm your host, Alex Gold. I'm joined today by Michael J. Fauci. Fauci, how's it going?
Oh, life is good. Life is always better after a win. And anytime you could, you know, walk into Monday, a new week coming off of a win, what do you have to complain about? I got nothing.
I like when you always talk about walking into work with an extra pep in your step, but don't you work from home?
I do walk from home. Maybe I'm walking into the kitchen. I don't know, but look. There's nowhere for me to personally go, but I know that might not be the case for some of our listeners. So I hope that you guys are walking into work with a little bit extra pep in the step.
Does your wife ever be like, hey, can you tone it down a little bit? You're being a little bit
absolutely,
like,
all the time, 7 days a week.
About what? Just like your excitement after a win or something? Or like your upsetness after a loss?
Nah, just, you know, she works from home. She's home. I'm home. I'm public enemy number one, but you know what? I get excited, and that'll never change.
I respect that, Fauci. You never change who you are. But we are here to talk about the Pacers 121-100 victory over the Brooklyn Nets. But before we get into that, I just wanted to let everybody know quickly, if you like this show and you want to help support this show, there is a way you can do that without giving us any money. It's simply by just taking your time and not pushing fast forward through any of the advertisements on this podcast. So if you don't mind and you would like to help this show out, I'm going to do a better job of spreading out the advertisements so they're not all lined up in a row, so it's not as lengthy. But if there's a way you guys could just be like, hey, let me check that ad out, like, see if there's something I'm interested in, that would be greatly appreciated. So we appreciate all of your support of listening to this show. But if you could just, you know, maybe take one for the team here and spend a few minutes listening to some ads, That will help the show out. And there is ways you can speed it up. So if you want to go from, you know, 1x to 2x during the ads, feel free to speed listen to the ads. That also helps. But anyway, let's talk about something a little bit more exciting than listening to advertisements on the podcast. Let's talk about the Indiana Pacers putting on a very great defensive game once again, finding a way to beat a Brooklyn Nets team that was hanging around for a little bit here, Focci, and taking care of business at home in a game they really needed to win.
Yeah, look, anytime you can hold a team to 100 in the NBA in today's era, is that's fantastic, especially for a Pacers team that had questions on defense all year. But when you mentioned hanging around, the Nets were in control for much of that first half. I know Indiana went into halftime with a two-point lead, but the first half, you were just like, what's going on? I mean, Tyrese was sluggish. The Pacers were a little bit sluggish. Everything changed in that second half, but for that first half, I was like, this is just not how you wanted to respond coming off of that letdown against Chicago.
No, you're right. I think they got off to a little bit of a slow start, and it was a really poor shooting night once again from the Pacers, specifically Tyrese Haliburton. It just continues to be a horrible experience for him from outside on the arc. But 1-9 from three in this game, Focci, was a big story. He finished the game 6 of 18, but I thought he looked much different in that third quarter. Was
definitely
more forceful, attacking the basket, and was able to get some and ones. And it's like, okay, if we see Tyrese kind of take this approach to scoring offensively, I think it's going to open up more for that 3-point shot. I thought it was great how he threw his hands up to the heavens after he finally hit a three after missing his first 8 attempts in the game. So it was really great. But this game, there's no doubt about it in my mind. He only played 28 minutes, but he had 28 points on 11 of 22 shooting, 11 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 steals. He was a plus 22 for the game. Pascal Siakam. This was a Pascal Siakam game. And so it kind of brought the question to my mind during the game, where would this Pacers team be at right now, Focci, had they not traded for Pascal Siakam?
I think they would have been very, you know, on a major slump, because look, Bruce Brown and bringing what, you know, and Jordan Warren bringing what Pascal Siakam has been bringing to this team. Maybe they could have held on to Buddy Hield, maybe, but at the same point, this Pacers team, I think, would probably be in firm play-in territory and never really being a threat to be able to do anything in the playoffs. Right now, you could start to see, it looks like Siakam, you know, is, I don't, you want to say getting into like a major rhythm, but it's like it takes time. And I think that right now, I mean, you're just seeing like, okay, this is every reason why you pony up those first round picks to be able to get a guy of Pascal Siakam's caliber. And I mean, Carlisle was gushing about Siakam after the game. There were some great quotes. One of them was basically saying, you know, Pascal was great tonight. He was great on offense, and defensively, he had his best game. It wasn't even close. We're really proud of him. This is what top players have to do. These guys have to set the tone and make and get your hands dirty. Loose ball plays that don't show up in the stat sheet. That's exactly what Siakam was doing against Brooklyn. And we know he needed more shots. He took more shots. In the fourth quarter alone, 6 shots after against, you know, Chicago. He had 1 or 2 in the fourth quarter alone. So it was a big difference to see.
It was great to see Pascal be more aggressive. And one thing I really enjoyed watching from him is how he would kind of initiate the offense. It was like he'd get a rebound, he'd take the ball up the court, and it wasn't always, hey, let's pass it to Tyrese and kind of get things going. But to answer my own question, you know, it is a bit of a rhetorical question too, because I think everybody knows, like, without Pascal Siakam, this team would not be where they are right now. And that's, you know, in the top 6 based on their record right now. But when I look at Pascal Siakam, and I'm not saying this to put Tyrese Haliburton down, like, this is still Tyrese Halliburton's team, but Pascal Siakam is the best player right now on the Indiana Pacers.
Facts.
And Tyrese Haliburton is struggling a little bit, still battling from that injury. You can tell his explosiveness is not the same. We talk about this ad nauseum on every single episode. But it's clear to me right now that Pascal Siakam is the best overall player on this team on both sides of the basketball. And they need him to be great to continue to go in the direction they want to go. And so if he can continue to be this aggressive, and I know Carlisle spoke about how fast he was playing and he almost needed to slow down a little bit, I would rather hear that than hear him not being aggressive enough. So it was a huge turning point in the game when Pascal Siakam picked up his second foul early in the first quarter. He goes out of the game, doesn't come back in like he had been with that second unit. They kind of wrote it out with an all-bench lineup, and that bench lineup was not very good. And so they had to put Pascal in for Obi Toppin, I think like 3 minutes into the second quarter, to try to get some scoring out there. And then the Pacers went on like a 7-2 run right after that. So I think you're slowly starting to see just how impactful he is. And when you talked about, Carlisle said this was Siakam's best defensive game, when Dustin Dopierik asked Siakam about that, he said, well, I try to play great defense every night. I'm not just trying to do it, you know, like every once in a while. So Siakam's working his butt off defensively to get better. And I think we're just starting to see, like, he's slowly but surely figuring things out with where he belongs on this team.
No, it's true. And look, one of the quotes he was really talking about is that he's all about the team. He's really all about winning. That's his focus. And I love that because, you know, winning is fun. And I feel that if the Pacers are able to win, hey, it's a no-brainer for Siakam to re-sign. I know a lot of Pacers fans think it's a done deal, but still, you want to see the Pacers finish strong and be able to have some success in the playoffs. And the Raptors, they weren't having that type of success. So I think it's exciting when you see Siakam playing to that potential of, you know, this is the guy that Indiana went after and really, you know, accumulated those assets to be able to make that big move. For Siakam, the 22 shots ties his most as a Pacer. So it was everything that Indiana needed when we had been saying before there was just not enough touches. I mean, 12 shot attempts against Chicago. He ups it to 22. You can't tell me the Pacers weren't better as a result. And obviously it's something I've touched on before. When Siakam's rebounding, the Pacers are winning. He had a double-double with 11 boards. They're now 5-1 when Siakam has a double-double as a Pacer.
Yeah, they're 3-0 too when he gets 20 points and 10 rebounds in a game. They're 3-2, I believe it is, in the games that he's had, I think, 20 or more field goal attempts with the Pacers too. So obviously that's not like a big sample size whatsoever, but it's like we need to see more touches from him. Just see him be more aggressive. But in this game, Fauci, some big numbers stand out to me. First and foremost, like the points in the paint differential. Indiana scored their most points in the paint this season, 82 points in the paint compared to 42 for Brooklyn. And another stat that I just realized as we're talking, 105 shots for the Pacers compared to just 77 for the Brooklyn Nets. Kind of wild. Wow.
I didn't realize that. Yeah, that is an incredible difference.
They did have 15 more free throws than Indiana. But, you know, still, and I think they ended up having, let's see here, they had 8 more turnovers. So that could kind of be where that difference makes up. But I was shocked. I was like, how did the Pacers have 28 more field goal attempts?
Yeah, I mean, look, that's a winning recipe. It's not something that you're able to really duplicate often. That's definitely an outlier of like, hey, that's not going to happen too much. But in this game, I think that was incredibly essential. But yeah, you talked about the damage that Indiana did in the paint. I mean, that was awesome to see. Anytime you're going to outscore a team in the paint by 40, you know, almost double them up, that's a big difference. But forcing the 20 turnovers, I think that it was another thing that was just a big difference maker. Then also Indiana winning the rebounding battle. I feel that they got their hands dirty in this game. They did everything that you needed to do. And in that third quarter, I mean, it was very evident who was the better team. Indiana held Brooklyn to 5 of 18 shooting in that third quarter, and eventually they grew that lead to 27 points. And we talked about it earlier in this episode. Brooklyn was in control for the majority of that first half. Once that third quarter started, I mean, there was no looking back for the Pacers.
Yeah, it was great to see Indiana outscore, I believe, Brooklyn by 19 points in the second half. Something like that. I think, 19 points? Yeah, I think so. Because they were up by 2 at halftime. So they ended up winning the game by 21. So they outscored Brooklyn by 19 points in the second half and really did what they had to do and just put this team away quickly. And it's like they finally had a really good, strong third quarter. And they got off to a slow start once again. It wasn't great. They had some good looks. So, I mean, Tyrese Halliburton was getting some really good looks here, Fauci. And that's what's a little bit frustrating. And I think the injury is part of it. I think the other part of it is it's starting to become more of a mental thing. He came out early from halftime to get some shots up. And it's just like, eventually the doors are going to blow off the roof and he's going to start hitting everything. And I know that Carlisle mentioned that too, but like this team had to find a way to win when they weren't hitting their threes. Just 6 of 30. You go back to, you know, November, December, we're probably talking about a loss here. Because we talked about that all the time. Like, if the Pacers don't hit this many threes, like, they're not usually going to win these games. But with the way they've kind of changed their the way they're built, right, with Siakam now being more of a force and Turner doing a little bit better job of being more efficient in the paint and Obi Toppin getting out and running, like, no guy on this Pacers team made two threes. Everybody that shot a three, they only made one. So that's what's really interesting about how this team played overall. So I just feel like the 82 points in the paint was just massive. And I love the way that they were able to kind of dig in defensively and get some stops and really pour it into the paint to make it more difficult for the Brooklyn Nets to stop them and really get any momentum going.
Yeah, I mean, after giving up 30 to Brooklyn in the first quarter, Indiana proceeds to give up 27 in the second and then 21 and 22 points, you know, in the second half. So holding them to, you know, 43 second half points is that's more than the Pacers have given up in individual quarters this year. So I think that that says a lot. But I think for the starters, they really, you know, set the tone in this game. I think every starter had a minimum plus minus of plus 16 or more. I think that that was great to see. Siakam getting to the line was nice. He had six free throw attempts, a perfect 6 of 6, that is. So I think that that was great. And then also you got a Pacers team that had six players in double figures. Obviously, that's been their strength. Jalen Smith had 9, so they nearly had 7 in double figures. And I think that that's a great sign to see that the Pacers were able to win a game convincingly when Tyrese did not have it going of, you know, 6 of 18 shooting. It's great that in many games that might plague the Pacers, but against Brooklyn, collective effort to get the job done.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I want to transition now a little bit, Fauci, into some of the play from some of the other guys. And Ben Shepherd is a guy that I want to talk about in this game because he was one of those players that did score in double figures. This is now the fifth time, I believe, he scored in double figures for the team, and the team is undefeated when he scores in double digits. And one of the things I love about Ben Shepherd is the way that he defends on both ends. And I'm sure you saw the quote that I got from Aaron Nesmith when asking about Ben Shepherd, and he said he's always been a great defender, and he's got, you know, his hands are always out, got quick feet, and he thinks he's going to be a great player. And there's been some back and forth on Twitter about that quote. I know Chuck and Jamie were talking about it on Twitter as well, saying, I don't really see it with him yet offensively. But I will just say this. He's an inconsistent offensive player, but he's a very consistent defensive player. And that's one thing he can grow off of. A player that I kind of gave like a comp to maybe who he could become is Danny Green. I don't know if you see that or not, but that to me is someone I kind of see him becoming.
I mean, look, that'd be cool. Danny Green is a winner. That man's got rings. So I think that that would be awesome to see. But I think that that's also not an unrealistic comp. You know, I feel like anyone who's undersized in the league but can play some defense and is a good passer, oh, that's Draymond Green. But I feel like, you know, with a guy like a Ben Shepherd, it's like, okay, hey, Danny Green was a guy who carved out a really good career in the NBA. So I would love for him to be a Danny Green-like player. When you mentioned, you know, being inconsistent offensively, yeah, because he's a rookie, you know, give him time. But I think he plays the game right. You know, Ben Shepherd's not the type of guy who's coming out there and be like, why did he shoot that? Like, he's a smart player. I think we're going to see that ball go in more and more as time goes on. But for right now, I mean, you could make an argument that he's playing some of his best basketball when the Pacers need him to. Like, he's really starting to come along in his process as a rookie, right when Indiana is really starting to count on him ever since Ben Mathurin went down. So I think that that's great to see. We've seen an uptick in minutes. I mean, this month, In March, he's averaging 19 minutes per game. So it shows that he's an essential part of this Pacers team. He missed a couple games, you know, earlier, but it's great to see. And right now, the Pacers need these type of performances. When you say 5-0, when he scores in double figures, get this man the rock.
Yeah, I mean, he's not forcing shots, which is what you like about it. He's scoring the right way, taking the open shots when they're there. And one thing, I think it was Tyrese Haliburton that brought it up. It's like they were telling him to look at the rim when he catches the ball, because there was times where he was just like catching on the outside and not looking to shoot and not kind of making himself a threat from out there. So he's done a much better job of that. I think I've noticed a few different times throughout the last couple of games where he may have not done that all the way and kind of just ready to kind of kick the ball back out. But, you know, be ready to go, be ready to score, because this team trusts in you. Obviously, Rick Carlisle's giving you the green light to play a little bit more extended minutes here with the second unit as they're trying to navigate through all the injuries that they have right now with Ben Mathurin out for the year, and obviously Doug McDermott's still out with his injury. He'll be out for the Cavs games. So, you know, still not sure when he's going to return. Could be against Detroit, but we'll see. But, yeah, Shep has just been really, really good, and he had some nice steals in this game that led to fast break opportunities. I know we got an and one on one as well. But Rick Carlisle just said, you know, we need all the team to defend at the same level as Nesmith, Nimhard, and Shepard. And we talk about it. We always talk about how good Nimhard and Nesmith are defensively. For Carlisle to pair Shepard with that group, that just shows you how much confidence they have in him as a player. And I think he's going to have an impact on this team for the rest of the season and probably in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think so. I think the Pacers kind of need him to have an impact in the playoffs, because right now when you start to look at this bench, you know, you're starting to be like, you know what? Hey, we knew what to expect out of a Ben Mathurin, but I feel like for a guy like Ben Shepherd, you kind of need him to, hey, if those shots aren't falling, bring it on defense. If you're getting the shots to fall, then that's a major contribution for Indiana. So I think that says a lot about a rookie that we really did not know how much he would contribute early on when the Pacers drafted him, but that pick is just looking great. And we looked at it initially as more of a, hey, this looks like a Buddy Hield replacement from a three-point shooting standpoint. Now, all of a sudden, that contract is phenomenal for the Pacers. The three-point shot hasn't been, you know, there's been flashes at times, right? It has looked good. But, you know, he hasn't been like this marksman from three. But I feel very confident in his career moving forward that the three-point shot will be there far more consistently. But the defense is already there. And I think that that's something that we didn't think would be there from his rookie year.
Yeah, and I'm not ready to say that I've seen the Buddy Hield comparisons come to fruition yet. You know, that has been a talking point. I forget who even mentioned at the beginning, but maybe it was Chad Buchanan that talked about how they see a little bit of, you know, Buddy Hield and Ben Shepherd's game. I think that he's really good with, you know, about moving without the basketball and setting the right screens. And I think Caitlin Cooper had some really good points on that on her Twitter account. And she might have even written an article about that on Sunday. So if you guys want to check that out, make sure you go to her Patreon basketball. She wrote and check that out. We always love having Caitlin on the pod and talking with her. She'll be on next week. But yeah, I just feel like Ben Shepherd does so many little things that people probably don't even realize that he does, aside from the occasional scoring from outside, getting in a fast break or getting his hands on, you know, loose balls defensively. So I really have enjoyed the way he's played this game. But you know, another guy that I thought was really good in this game was Aaron Nesmith. And he only played 26 minutes, Fauci. It looked like he went down with a shoulder injury in the third quarter, did not return to the game. He did come into the post-game press conference and talk and didn't really get any clarification on, you know, what exactly that diagnosis was. But I don't see him on the injury report for Monday unless I missed it. So that's good to hear, but it seems like he went out of the game with that injury. But still, 16 points in the game, 5 of 8 shooting-wise, had 14 in the first half. I mean, he really was what him and Siakam together were the two guys that kind of kept the Pacers in offensively with so many guys struggling, especially Tyrese in that first half.
I felt he was aggressive. I mean, he was 5 of 5 from the free throw line, so him and Siakam combined for 11 of the Pacers' 16 free throw attempts. Yeah. So I really do hope that everything is all right with Nesmith, because I have a little bit of that PTSD with Mathurin and the shoulder injury when they said, hey, he's going to be reevaluated, but he's going to be out for about the next four games. And next thing you know, yeah, he was out for the rest of the season. So this Pacers team absolutely needs Aaron Nesmith, and there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. So I really do hope that everything's all right. But I also think that this was the type of game that He didn't need to return or play much, you know, down the stretch, because the Pacers had things in control. So really hope that everything's all right. Obviously, we could really use him against Cleveland, no doubt about that. Detroit, you know, if the next game was Detroit, even Detroit is playing good basketball right now. They're definitely playing some of their best basketball. So there's really no nights off that anyone, you know, can really take. But you really do hope that everything's all right for Neesmith.
Yeah, for sure. And they're going to need him. I'm looking at Dustin Dopierak's Twitter now. It's just Doug McDermott still out for Monday. Donovan Mitchell also officially rolled out for the game. So no Donovan Mitchell in that game either. But
and Evan Mobley's been out.
Yeah. So that's a big break once again for the Pacers against the Cavaliers, who have just struggled to keep that team healthy. But you can never count them out, because even with those guys out before, they've taken down some big teams like Boston. Mm-hmm. You know, Dean Wade outscored the Celtics in that fourth quarter a couple weeks ago. So you just never can count anybody out in the NBA. But yeah, this is a really quality one from the Pacers, and I think defensively, that's where you got to be the most excited about, because this team dug in defensively, and they were much more physical. I mean, once again, I think this is two out of the last three games we've really seen Tyrese Haliburton be more physical as a defender, and I think that he feels more of a burden, more pressure to kind of become a better defender, especially with how bad he's been offensively. You know, just four assists for Tyrese. I know we've kind of been jumping all over him, but he had one assist at the half. And just, I think he was 0-7 from three, maybe 0-6 from three at the half. So it was really rough for him. But I feel like he's slowly just starting to kind of get his feel back for the game. And there's going to be a moment where we see it happen. But overall, just a really solid game from everybody involved. You already mentioned Jalen Smith had 9 points. He also had 5 rebounds. A very solid game from him. And I felt like he had a tough matchup. De'Ron Sharpe is what I labeled as an athletic tank, Fauci. That man is massive compared to Jalen Smith when you see them in size. So I thought Jalen Smith had a pretty good game, though.
No, he did. And I think it's just, you know, Jalen is just one of those, I think he's still just underrated, or that guy that, you know, there's always so many other people that you could talk about before Jalen Smith, but he brings it. I mean, typically not playing much more than 20 minutes a night, and I feel like he's always bringing it. So I think that was great to see.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Dude, on the flip side of things, I was a little bit, you know, Mikal Bridges, a very quiet game. And this is a guy that there was rumored that, hey, you know what, they might turn down 5 first-round picks. We've heard them turn down 4. And so you start to look at this, and it's like Bridges was 1 of 8 in this game. And this is someone that, you know, almost felt like the Nets were labeling as untouchables, and it's not untouchable. And then you see the Pacers go out there and get a guy like Pascal Siakam for what seems to be far cheaper. And I feel like Siakam had his fingerprints all over this game. And I feel like for Bridges, you know, it was a very quiet performance. One thing that I'm very happy about this Nets team is the Pacers get to play him 2 more times to end the regular season. So I think that's going to be a good boost for Indiana. So I think that always helps.
Yeah, and Mikal Bridges, it's an interesting dynamic, because me and you have talked about him a lot as he could be that missing guy for the Pacers. And I think with the roster they currently have, like, yeah, I think he could be that small forward that they're missing. But I still think that I would probably rank Siakam and Haliburton over him in the pecking order. And that just kind of shows where he's at. I think that he was, you know, a really good fit with what that Suns team was trying to do as kind of like definitely that third, fourth option with Chris Paul, Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton when they made it to the NBA Finals. He's a very quality player, but I think that he's not a number one guy.
He's definitely not.
He's miscast a little bit.
You're talking about a really good, really good number three.
Yeah, potential number two, but I still think he's better suited as a number three.
Exactly. And if he's a good number two, you know, are you a playoff team? Maybe you're just happy to be in the playoffs. but I don't think you're a playoff team that's making noise. And I felt like when you're asking for 4 to 5 first-round picks, it's just too steep. He's a very good player, but I just feel that that type of offer has to be for an all-star slash all-NBA type of player. And while Mikal Bridges is a really good player, he's neither of those.
No, and that's what's really interesting about him. And I know he has played a lot. I don't think he's missed a game all season long.
I think it was 83 games.
Yeah.
So he prides himself on not missing games.
Yeah, a lot of minutes too. And I think he's not been very good since the All-Star break. I know Doug Norrie of Locked On Nets, who joined the podcast last episode, he was tweeting about that a lot and just saying how much different he's looked. And he was pretty adamant, like, if that Nets deal was true with the Rockets, where they could have got their picks back for Mikal Bridges, he said they should have done it in a heartbeat and that there was a mistake not to do it. And I kind of agree with them. I feel like if you could trade Mikal Bridges for pretty much the same package or close to the same package you got James Harden for, you know, that would be very smart in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, the Nets are a team that it's not that they stink. It's that they're in the middle, and that sometimes that's one of the worst places to be. It's like they're not a play-in team, but they're not the worst team. They're just kind of floating around there, and I just feel that there's a lot of question marks when you look at this team. They got rookies that they really didn't get much playing time. They did not develop this year. You got Ben Simmons, who has just been taking up a large part of that payroll, and I just feel like right now you heard that I think they were what they turned down at least. I think they claimed to turn down 2 first-round picks for Dorian Finney-Smith. It's like, I don't know who's calling the shots over there or what they're doing, but I just feel like it sounds like they had a lot of good offers, and they've turned them all down, and now they're just kind of stuck in that that awkward part of the standings.
Yeah, now they're a weird team that has no direction right now with no control of their picks and not really good enough to really make themselves any, you know, viable threat in the play-in. So they are just kind of stuck in no man's land, and they're going to have to make some serious decisions here in the offseason. But I did like the way Kevin Ollie coached. I tweeted about it. I felt like he was just super, super encouraging out there. Like, I know De'Ron Sharpe, like, actually, like, grabbed a rebound, but his foot was on the line, and he was out of bounds, and he was, like, so mad at himself. And Kevin Ollie's like, no, it's, you know, you were hustling to get the ball. Like, that's a good play. Like, he was always just trying to, like, uplift his team, and I feel like you can tell a coach really is trying to better his team, get them to play a little bit smarter and have more confidence in themselves. And I just felt like this Nets team was just like, man, what are we doing? Like, they just did not seem like they were there, especially in that second half. When the Pacers kind of put the clamps on them, you could tell they were ready to quit and pack it in. And I know that it's probably hard for guys that have their minds, you know, real, like, they've got their minds made up, like, we're not going to be a playoff team, so what are we giving 110% for? But some of these guys need bigger contracts moving forward, and I thought, you know, Dennis Schroeder was so, so good in this game. I thought he was really just having some really nice plays out there.
Yeah, I mean, this Nets team folded like a lawn chair. I mean, truly, they just, in that second half, they didn't have much life. But, yeah, I mean, there's guys like Nick Claxton who's looking for a new deal. Cam Thomas is one of those players that it's like he can score with the best of them. I have no idea what type of offer he's going to fetch when his time comes because he's been kind of in and out of that lineup for the Nets at times. But I think when they don't have much to play for, we're going to see him putting up some big stats. And I remember a couple of years ago, that's someone that we talked about in the draft, and it was just we knew he could score, led all freshmen in scoring, but his scoring has not translated to wins. So that'll be interesting to see. But, yeah, like I said, happy the Pacers get to play them a few more times. Wins are not a guarantee against teams like Brooklyn and where they are on the standings. So great to see Indiana get one done. But I don't think it was much of a surprise because there was that letdown against Chicago. So I felt the Pacers needed to respond. And, you know, they had a night off while we're recording this on a Sunday. They were off, but you got to be able to get back to it against Cleveland. And that would be, no matter who's out there, that would still be a very good win for a Pacers team that has beaten Cleveland already twice this year, I believe.
Yeah, for sure. So Donovan Mitchell is out, Max Strus is out, and Dean Wade is a game-time decision based off of the ESPN injury report. I think this Cavs team has been playing pretty good basketball. They're 42-25. They've had some big wins. They've had some disappointing losses, but the Pacers are predicted to win this game 60.4% chance, according to ESPN. So we'll see if that comes to fruition. But Fauci, I want to put your knowledge to the test here a little bit. The Indiana Pacers and the Cleveland Cavaliers have 37 players who have played for each of their these franchises. Can you name?
That's a lot.
Can you name like 10 of them? Is there 10?
10 of them? I mean, just on the spot. I mean,
yeah, like guys that played for both Indiana and the Cavs that you can think of off the top of your head.
All right. First, James Jones, I believe.
Yep. Yes. He was on there. James Jones. Okay.
I'm going to go Dante Jones.
Yep.
Tristan Thompson.
Uh huh.
Let's see. I'm trying to go with like I'm like obviously thinking of those. I thought of those LeBron teams for a while. George Hill.
George Hill, yeah. Think about some current players on their roster.
Oh, well, Caris LeVert was a former let's see.
Another player on their roster that played for the Pacers in his rookie season.
How recently is this?
Recently, I think he was drafted in like 16 or 17, second round pick. Same college as Tyrese Halliburton.
Oh, George Niang. All right, let's see. Okay, so that's already like five.
You're at six right now.
Six.
And, one we just talked about from the Nets game.
From the Nets.
He's not a player, though.
Oh, he's not a player. Talking about Kevin Ollie?
Yes, sir.
Okay, Kevin Ollie. All right, let's see. Come on. Give me a couple more. Cavs. Trying to think of like some throwbacks.
One's a general manager of a team right now on the West Coast. The Pacers play them this upcoming week.
General manager. Okay, let's see.
He played with the Pacers during the Jim O'Brien era.
Oh. He's with the Warriors. Mike Dunleavy.
Yes.
Yep. All right, man, this is crazy. All right, what do we got, seven or eight?
You got eight. You got two left.
Okay, all right.
You want any more hints?
Yeah, I do.
So one of these guys played Survivor.
Oh, Scott Pollard.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. That was a good hint. all right, at this point, I can't
One was a guest on this show. You did an interview with him. I don't think I was there for the interview. I was on vacation. It was in the summer. It was the year we interviewed Tyrese Halliburton. Sharpshooter.
Oh, CJ Miles.
Yeah.
Miles Fresco.
Miles Fresco, yeah.
Yep. No, he was a good man. CJ Miles. I don't think he should have ever really been asked to be the number two option on the Pacers at any really point. But, okay, there we go. I was happy I was able to get to 10.
Yeah, you got there with a little bit of help. Obviously, it's easier for me because I'm reading this. But no AJ Price. You didn't mention him. I'm disappointed with that one.
Your boy.
Yeah. One that I was a little bit surprised you didn't pick, Andrew Bynum.
Yeah. Who could ever forget the two games that he played as a Pacer and how our season went downhill after that? Yeah. All right.
Did you realize that Anthony Johnson played for the Cavaliers? I did not remember.
I really didn't, because when I think of Anthony Johnson, obviously you think of him as a Pacer. I remember him as a Dallas Maverick. I think might have played for the Nets, or maybe I just remember him playing good.
He did play for the Nets. Yeah.
Okay. There we go. Yeah. So I can name three Anthony Johnson teams off the top of my head. I think it's decent, but I don't remember the Cavs.
Yeah, there's some other names in here, but nothing that really like sticks out. Mike Sanders, he's an old school Pacer, but he played with the Cavs from 88 to 93. Third string point guard, Donald Sloan, ring a bell.
Okay. Yeah, I remember Donald Sloan.
Mm-hmm. Mark West, remember him? 1985 to 1997 with the Pacers.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Bruno Sundahl, remember him?
Maybe. I don't know.
He was in the early 2000s with the Pacers, but yeah. All right, so that's kind of it. Lua Munson, Justin Anderson, some recent names.
Justin Anderson. Yeah.
So there we go. So that's a lot of fun. Obviously, I've been doing some drafts with these players, you know. But I thought I'd do a little trivia here, see how Fauci would do. Good. But other than that, nothing else really to say on this game. Just I thought it was a great win. Pacers needed to beat a bad team, and first time they've seen the Nets this season. Fun fact. They never played the Nets in the year 2023.
That's really interesting. And it's also a shame because I live in the New York area and it's just one. I mean, you could say maybe it's not a shame. It's one it's less L based on my track record. But at the same point, you know, I really do enjoy being able to go to games and not having to travel too far for it. Brooklyn, always a seat available in that stadium. It is not quite like Madison Square Garden where it could sell out on any given night. So, yeah, it's always fun for me.
Yeah, so big win for the Pacers. They win by 21, 121 to 100. And really, it really wasn't even that close. The Nets got some points there at garbage time trying to make that deficit look a little bit better. But 43 points only for the Nets in the second half was a huge defensive moment for the Pacers. So really just a solid game from everybody and a big team win. But Fauci, go ahead and let everybody know where they can find us at on social media.
Absolutely. So you can find us on Twitter at PacersPod, STP. You can find Alex on Twitter at AlexGoldenNBA. I can be found on Twitter at underscore FACCI. You can find us on Instagram at PacersPod, STP. You can find us on Facebook at Setting the Pace. You can find us on TikTok, Setting the Pace. And Alex, tell them where they can check us out on YouTube.
Ladies and gentlemen, check out the new rebranded YouTube page at youtube.com/settingthepace, a Pacers podcast. Went ahead and changed every single thumbnail on there, deleted some old episodes that really aren't relevant anymore, but try to keep the big ones there so you guys can go back and look at those. But if you're not already, subscribe to that, and please like all of our videos so more people can find it. So if you're listening to this on the YouTube page, like that video, subscribe to our channel, and we will continue to put the content out there for you. But Fauci, if you're glad the Pacers got a big win over the Brooklyn Nets, then hit me with those three words.
Let's go, Pacers!
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.